Welcome to the Leadership Window podcast with Patrick Jinks. Each week, through a social sector lens, Patrick interviews leaders and experts and puts us in touch with trends and tips for leading effectively. Patrick is an LSI certified leadership coach, a member of the Forbes Coaches Council, a best-selling author, award-winning photographer, and professional speaker. And now, here's Patrick.
Hello, leaders. Welcome to the Leadership Window. I'm Patrick Jinks, your host, leadership and strategy coach, and president of the Jinks Perspective. I'm happy to be into this week because last week we did our first solo episode since the inaugural episode of the show, and I just know that this show is far better when there are people smarter than I am on the show with me, and we have that today. In fact, we have three of them. Really excited about this episode. These are three wonderful women that I am just super proud to be a friend, a colleague, been looking forward to this episode because I know them individually. I know the people they are, the leaders they are. And they've got a really exciting piece of content that I think maybe even leads into a series of content and ways that you can engage in it that we're going to talk about today. And Danielle, Grace Ann, and Phoebe, I want to first just say super, super welcome to the show. Thank you all for figuring this out to coordinate our schedules and make this all work. Welcome.
Thanks for having
Thank
you.
us.
Hello.
So Danielle, is it, I should know your last name, Sangeeta?
Well, Sangeeta Rottenberg is my official last name, but Sangeeta is kind of like my holistic coaching name.
Right, right. And maybe your stage, it's your stage name, right?
It's stage name, exactly.
Danielle has a background. I'm going to let her tell you more about it, but she is an Ayurvedic practitioner, a yoga instructor. She is the one that we turn to in the Blue Ridge Institute organization that we're all a part of when we need to center ourselves. And she is uber passionate about holistic health. And I'm going to let her say more about that when she talks a little bit more. Grace Ann Alfiero, I probably have known the longest, again, through our association with BRI, the Blue Ridge Institute. And Grace Ann is... if I were to describe her a few years ago, I would describe her as a storyteller, particularly a digital storyteller, but she is also making a tremendous vocation and business around helping social sector organizations get resources, a tremendous talented grant writer. And her life's work has centered around assisting marginalized groups through all kinds of ways. I'll let her say more about that. And then Phoebe, I met through Grace Ann, and Phoebe is the third co-author of the book that we're going to be talking a good bit about on this episode, Reactivate Your Life. And she began her career as the environmental energy czar in a city in Massachusetts. And a few years later, she found herself in Florida with a complete professional shift, focusing on digital design and digital communication. So there's a lot more I could go into, but because there are three of them, I want to condense the time and get into content because I can't wait to get into that. But let me start by going back around now to all three of you and just inviting you to say anything more about you that that you feel like would be valuable for our listeners to know about you and your role in leadership or this book or just anything else that you want to say about yourself that I didn't, that I wouldn't have said as well. Danielle?
I think you did a great job. I think maybe just adding author to that. Mm. I've written a couple of other chapters and other books, and that actually will tie into our story of the Reactivate. But yes, uber passionate about, especially in the nonprofit sector and really helping leaders in the nonprofit world, like bring balance and harmony, both physically and mentally, But I think other than that, you said it perfectly.
Well, timing is good for balance and centering and all those good things right now. That is for sure. We can use some of that in 2020. And so, yeah, if I understand this correct, reactivate your life is exactly, it's a sequel, right? Activate your life is the first piece of work. Am I right?
Yes. There was, 2 years ago, I was asked to be one of the, I guess, quotation experts in writing a chapter from other experts throughout the world that wrote chapters. There was 50 of us in the volume one, and that was Activate Your Life. And then there was a volume two that followed where Grace came on board and was able to write with me. And there were 30 authors, again, from around the world on different segments. It was segmented, and then we all kind of fell under the caveat of our expertise. So then Reactivate was kind of a birthing of the sequel of the two sequels.
Well, I love it because the subtitle, so it's Reactivate Your Life, Living, Surviving, and Thriving, Lessons Learned and Inspirational Stories from a Pandemic World. So it is super, super timely. I read it and thought, well, this is good stuff at any point in time, but it is definitely mindful stuff right now. Grace Ann, what else would be interesting for our listeners to know about you and your background and what brings you to this work?
Oh, thanks, Patrick. I think you got it right when you said storyteller. I love to tell people's stories. Sometimes that happens in a grant proposal. Sometimes that happens on communication platforms, like on social media, Facebook or LinkedIn or any of the other platforms. And I've just found in my career that the one thing that people like to pawn off on other professionals is the writing part of their job. So there always seems to be opportunities to help people craft their story. And sometimes we craft that story so that they can get some money for their organization, or sometimes we craft that story just so that they can engage their audience. But that's most of what I do. Probably what the listeners should know as well is that Danielle and I go way back. We both started a nonprofit organization together in 1995. The organization is called Creative Clay Cultural Arts Center. It still exists today. Both of us have resigned from our positions and moved on to do other work in our own communities. But that's something that we have very much in common. And that's actually where I met Phoebe, is through our work at Creative Clay. So the three of us have known each other for quite some time. And we've been doing the work to help our communities through nonprofit efforts for a couple of decades now.
And your company is Arts in Action. What is that? What's the central tenet of that organization?
So I primarily do nonprofit management consulting for organizations, which can look like strategic planning or communication support or grant writing or board development. Anything that will help build capacity for your nonprofit, that's what my firm typically handles. So on any given day, we could be writing a grant, we could be leading a strategic planning session, or we could be researching opportunities in your communities or in a broader geographic region to find funding for your programs or for your organization.
That's awesome. And we'll make sure that we have links to these websites and resources and the book and everything else on the show page, because I think it'll be really helpful. This podcast, as you might have heard in the introduction, and I know you know this, it's a podcast about leadership, but through a social sector lens. So in this case, we happen to be kind of talking about leadership in the person, this applies to not just nonprofit leaders, but anybody really. And then there are other times when we focus the show on the social sector lens. And so we've got a lot of listeners to the podcast already who are in the social sector or the volunteer sector or nonprofit sector. And all of you have resources that are of great value to the sector. And so we'll make sure that they have those resources. And Phoebe, I'm just curious as to how you made the journey from, you know, being an environmental expert for a municipality to being a digital creator and going into digital communications. And obviously I've seen your work and I'm familiar with your work on the digital side. It's super impressive. And how did you make that shift? Tell us more about yourself.
Well, it does seem a little strange, but at the same time, it's really logical because I just kind of moved the shift to still environmental education, which is my passion, but working with corporations and energy and environmental and civil development within Florida. So, and at, you know, what, as the world started changing, I've been at this a long time. I kept up with the digital world. I kept up with where software was going and where management systems were going, and just kept keeping abreast of how to do database management and coding. So, you know, it was just a matter of the skill set kept growing and growing. And now I do everything from helping individuals maintain their digital reputation to actually creating presentations and websites and things along those lines. So to me, it seems logical.
Yeah, it sounds logical when you explain it. Though I tell you, a common thread is this: the creativity that all three of you have. Such creative minds. To not only do you all seem to have a very creative component to some technical work that you also do, but just the, in this book, the storytelling and the creative way of taking this message and synthesizing it, putting out there for people, it's just really cool. So, Danielle, you told us a little bit about the background for the book. I'm particularly curious in how this particular one then came about. So the first two were anthologies that involved a lot more people, and now the three of you have really kind of honed in on this specifically about, you know, living, surviving, and thriving in a pandemic world. How did this particular project really come about? And I'd like to know from your perspective, any of you, who would you say this book is written for? Who's the ideal audience for the concepts in this book?
Well, okay. Well, first, let me just maybe go back to the first question. And I think when the pandemic hit, Grace and I were definitely talking about some of our own personal challenges when in March it really became very well known that this was going to be around for a bit. I had lost my job as a massage therapist. It was mandated by the state of North Carolina that we needed to close our doors. With that, so for 3 months I was unable to work, along with all of a sudden I had two kids who were coming home and were virtually learning, and then caring for and supervising my elderly parents that were very close by. So I think we were just having real life discussions about, wow, this is a game changer. This is a huge shift. And then Grace was sharing her concerns and her struggles and challenges. And it just kind of grew from that. Like, I think just the reality of it and how it navigated into, well, how can we share our stories and other stories so that we don't feel like we are all alone, that we don't have a platform to express our concerns, our worries, and to be able to open this platform to other people. I do think our focus was for anyone, but primarily as women ourselves and women in leadership positions and women who may be like navigating this new way of, well, how do I work again? How do I do it from home? How do I do it from home with children? So we wanted to create some inspiring stories, maybe create a sisterhood, a tribe of sorts that we heal through our storytelling, and also create this safe space for others to share their stories, or maybe from our stories, they are able to have some ideas of how to adapt, how to be resilient, how to grow, how to find their purpose and dharma. And again, that reactivate became a very, it just like was automatic. It's like, okay, well, we did the activate, but this was really now a time of reactivating, shifting, and recreating ourselves in a new paradigm.
What I love about that is that it's not a book about dealing with and surviving. You move on. It's living, surviving, and thriving. So the book really takes a very positive turn toward taking the current situation that we're in and making the most of it, and not allowing ourselves the excuse to say, well, you know, our lives suck, right? Here's what we're going to do with this. And one of the sections in the book, in fact, I love the term creative pivoting. And I'm seeing it in my coaching life. I'm coaching executives who are finding some really creative ways to take this pandemic and go, wow, we've discovered some things about ourselves. First of all, we've discovered that we can move fast when we really need to. We didn't know that about ourselves. So we're going to try to move a little faster. Or we didn't know that we don't need all this space in our building. We could save thousands of dollars every month. We've learned how to operate virtually and still remain connected. So there's all these, I love pivoting stories. And who is it? Rahm Emanuel, who's credited with saying, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. So I love the term creative pivoting. And Grace Ann, I think this was a section you contributed to in the book. I'd love to hear more about where that, you know, where sort of where the term comes from. In particular, I know you tell a very specific story in the book about an organization who's done some pivoting, may provide a great example, but any others that you can share would be great too. Tell us about that concept.
So, well, you know, I somehow got really lucky and have the privilege of working with some really phenomenal nonprofit clients. And over the years, some of my clients, they've become family to me. And Jennifer Francis, who is the founder and leader of Best the Book Bus, is one of those persons that I consider, you know, family first, even more so than a client, just because of the work that we're doing with literacy. And I was able to go along for the ride, no pun intended, to look at different ways that we could still provide books and literacy opportunities to kids in the Tampa Bay area where she lives. And so I observed all of the different ways that she was able to work within her partnership network to still get those books out to the kids. And, you know, if those of you who don't know about Best the Book Bus, it's a mobile literacy. It's a Mercedes van that has been turned into a big giant like bookstore on wheels. And the cool thing about it is that all of the books that Jen gives out to the different kids and students and schools that she supports, all of those books are free. And the whole purpose of Best the Book Bus is to build home libraries for families that do not have the resources to have their own books in their own homes because of economic challenges. And, you know, a large percentage of the people that she serves are minorities. Many of them have English as a second language. And so these books are really important to these kids and to these families. And if we couldn't get them to them, then, you know, the whole purpose of the organization would be, you know, sort of dead in the water. So instead of providing read aloud opportunities and visits to schools, especially when the schools shut down, she was able to develop a plan where she could create grab and go opportunities and sanitize the books and package them up. Sitco, one of her sponsors, gave her a bunch of bags that she could use to bag up the books. And she would learn from the teachers, like what reading levels the kids needed. And then she was able to pre-prepare them and then deliver them to the school. So it was a no contact scenario, but the kids and the families could still get those books. And, you know, even though Best the Book Bus probably isn't considered a frontline agency, I would argue that they are, because I think that they're bridging the literacy gap right now for families that just don't have the resources to get to books and may not even have the resources for online education. So, you know, we've developed a couple of really interesting ideas for 2021, and we're in the middle of grant writing for those ideas right now, and we're just going to keep on going with it. The organization has grown. We've actually been able to hire another person to assist with the book distribution, and I would have never predicted this, but you know, Best the Book Bus is in a really exciting growth spurt. So talk about creative pivoting and making lemonade from lemons. That definitely Best the Book Bus made that happen. And, you know, something else that I wanted to just mention, too, is that the creative pivoting that happened, you know, I wanted to model some of that. And so when Phoebe and Danielle and I committed to each other that we would meet every single week for 1 hour at least to work on tackling all of the things that you have to do to create a book and launch it and launch a website and you know, launch social media platforms to support your book launch, all of those things that we needed to do. We just like sort of just committed that we would meet once a week, and however long it would take for us to get it together, that's however long it would take. And we worked probably from the middle of April all the way through July to get all of our ducks in a row, and nobody missed a week. I mean, we made that commitment to each other and we did it. And I think there was some creative pivoting that happened with our own schedules to make that happen. And then the other thing that I did was, you know, as soon as the pandemic hit and I didn't know what the future was going to hold, and I was like, oh my gosh, the nonprofits that pay me for grant writing may not be able to afford me anymore. And like, instead of looking at it as doom and gloom, I thought, wait a second, I'm a writer and I've always wanted to be a journalist. And so I reached out to some media companies, some online media companies, and I even applied at the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I'm laughing because I thought, why not, right? And I sent them some of my writing samples. And immediately I was asked to start writing for a media outlet that is in 2,500 hyperlocal markets. And I've sort of just developed this whole other side of reporting on nonprofits through our journalism effort. And so I think that this book is all about looking at what your assets are, looking at what your talents are, and figuring out different new ways that you can contribute to your community and to your society, and just going after it and making it happen. Because it's opened up so many more doors. And, you know, my firm is busier than it ever has been. And I'm sort of embarrassed to say that, because I know some people are really suffering and having really difficult time right now, but you know, stories have to be told, and that's what we like to do. And so we feel like we're in a good place right now, and we're looking for stories. And so, you know, you can go to reactivateyourlife.com, and we've got a section on our website where you can, if you've got a good inspirational story to make sure that it gets an audience, let us know, because we're looking at other volumes for Reactivate Your Life. And we're even looking at possibly including a volume that has content from teenagers, because that audience has been really affected by the pandemic in many different ways. And we want to give them a voice and a lens so that they can tell their story as well.
Well, I hope our listeners will take you up on that, because there are so many stories across the sector, and not just the sector, but just in life, of people who are whose stories could inspire other people. And we sometimes don't think about that, but the stories in the book here that you all place are incredibly inspiring. And I would one of the things that strikes me about all three of you is your own persistence to keep adding value. Like you are actually demonstrating, you're not just writing a book about living, surviving, and thriving in a pandemic world. You are demonstrating it, which gives it so much more power. And I appreciate that. And Phoebe, you in particular, you have a section in the book that you talk about this persistence. And I love the term you use, persist without exception. That is so challenging to me, so inspiring to me. Can you tell us more about that term, sort of what that means? What's the message for the reader here, and how is what does persistence without exception really mean? And I know you've tell a story behind this. You feel free to do that, but tell us more about that, because I love the term.
I think it's a great term, and I think it's so relevant, and it's really what underwrites the book in Reactivate, in that we can all say, okay, we'll persist. And we all know the value of persisting. It's not going to come if you don't, la, 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 la. But to persist without exception is to take that one extra step. I mean, we have lots of barriers. It's easy to be afraid of something. It's easy to be discouraged. But to just take that one extra step, that one step that will bring to fruition what you're going for. I tell a story about a wonderful National Speakers Association speaker by the name of Jen Samuel Chance. And she has a huge technology fear. And the reason we included her story was I really wanted people to know that, yeah, technology can be a little intimidating, and there's a lot of, a lot of barriers to technology, and there's a lot of knowledge that's required sometimes. But there are people there in this world that are happy to share the information. And if you persist, if you find them, if you look, if you keep going, and you know you have great content, you know you have great stories, and you want to get them out there, there's a way to do it. And that was really what I wanted to come across, was even though you know you've got wonderful content and you should share it and you know you'll persist, to persist without exception is to really take that final step and make sure that your voice is heard.
Okay. I read the story and I'm even more inspired hearing you say that. You know, last week I mentioned doing a solo episode last week. Last week I did a post-election day solo podcast about our responsibility as leaders to bring value in everything we say and do. You know, everyone, has been so, it's such a politically charged time, and we're such a divided country. And, we talk a lot of all this content about how people put toxicity out there and on social media and everything else. And my message to our listeners was really about, we have a responsibility as leaders to model what we want to see. And I just love this, that you're modeling it. And I think about, you made me think of my dad, actually, Phoebe, because he would love this. He would have loved this phrase, persisting without exception, because our dad always taught us, don't make excuses for life. Don't make excuses. Don't say, well, there was a pandemic, or I would have done it, or, well, I just didn't have the money, so I didn't do it, or I couldn't get the degree because of whatever. Don't make excuses. Take accountability. Your term was go that one extra step. Sometimes it's that one, that next step will be the one that unlocks the key. So I really love that. You also talk in the book about perseverance, and you might want to talk about the subtle difference, maybe, if there is, between persistence and perseverance. But Danielle, you in particular talk about perseverance, and another term that I just love. You guys are just full of these like You could write a whole book on some of these terms by themselves. You have a series, right? Creative pivoting and persisting without exception. Here's another one, psychological immunity. I've never heard that term before. I know what immunity is and building up immunity, you know, our immune systems to physical things and, you know, health things that we can become immune to. But psychological immunity, never thought about that term. And you connect it, Danielle, with perseverance. Can you make that connection for our listeners and talk a little bit about those terms? Because it's just a fascinating part of the book.
Sure. I may have made it up.
Get it copyrighted. Get it trademarked. I'm serious. If you did, what a great term. It's a book, psychological immunity.
As as a body worker and a holistic health practitioner, there's so much focus on like the physical immunity that we need. And, you know, people would come in all the time through my doors. They're exhausted. They don't have the stamina. They don't have the mental clarity that they want. They're fatigued. And so, you know, in so much of our society, we have solutions for that. But we really don't focus on our psychological aspect, how to build ourselves to handle stress better, how to handle anxiety and fear. So that, you know, has always been a fascination for me. So I think, you know, the perseverance was really about like, how do we bounce back? Like, how do we take what we've been handed with the pandemic, and how do we learn from it? How do we grow from it? How can we take that time where the world really just stopped? It went like 150 miles per hour to like zero. And there was a bit of whiplash, I think, that everybody was experiencing from that. You know, it took time for people to kind of change gears. And then, you know, there were those months where people were like, wow, you know, this is an opportunity, even though it was frightening and scary, it was an opportunity for people to, you know, plant that garden that they've been wanting to plant, or be able to read that book, or even to sleep in a little bit and to like really take care of themselves because the world stopped. And so I think that's part of the psychological immunity was to, hey, we need to get back to some basics. We need to be able to like take some moments of stillness. And what do we want? What are we missing in our lives? What's working? What's not working? If you're tired, why are you so tired? Is it because you're not eating well? Is it because you're not sleeping well, or you're so stressed from your job? So if I'm answering your question,
you're adding something that you're sitting there asking these questions, and now you're speaking my language, because I make my living asking questions and helping leaders ask the right questions. You're so right. I tell my coaches all the time, we don't pause and make sure we're even asking the right questions, let alone answering the questions effectively. We sometimes feel paralyzed and we don't know why. And it's just because we haven't paused and put a name to it. You know, what color is it? What does it smell like? What I'm really facing? What's really happening here? And so I loved your set of questions that you just went through. You know, why is this the case? And what is it that I really want? So that is just phenomenal. I think that pause is, there's such magic in that.
Right. And I do, you know, I think that's where the workbook we created became as important as the book itself, because there was some great questioning in there. It was an opportunity to journal, to sit down and ask those kind of hard questions that we don't often do when it becomes about yourself and self-reflection, self-analysis. But those things are essential in the foundation of growing. Mm-hmm. And growing isn't always easy. Right. And but these questions kind of help like reset yourself. Like, what are the bigger questions? What do I want? What was this opportunity in a sense presented? Why? And what can I do with it? How can I learn from it? So the perseverance is definitely to me hand in hand about the challenges are inevitable, changes happen, and how do we want to take that for either in a positive way or are we going to spiral downward? And so I think this book is about a positive aspect, how we can take these stories and be inspired to show our perseverance and our resilience.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Tell us more. You talk about the an organization called Bounty and Soul and the yes. story behind that. Tell that story, because I think that's a good example of perseverance.
Well, I've got to meet Allie within the first year. Allison Kasparian is the founder. And we actually work together because I have a nonprofit called the Yoga Service Movement that was offering free yoga and health and wellness to anybody who needed it. And it was really within Bounty and Soul organization that I and my team were working with. And so she came to me and we just developed this great friendship. But her story is really about perseverance. She left a very successful corporate world to pursue holistic nutrition and wellness. But it was because of a near-death experience. And her world was rocked. So she left everything and had to start from scratch in her, I believe it was her late or mid 40s. So she left this prosperous occupation and had all these material goods and went down to ground zero again. And it's a story about when she had reached her bottom or the starting over, she didn't have any money. She was financially devastated. She was food insecure. At times she was homeless. And she realized through that pain and suffering in many ways that there was some holes in the system. And so through her own experience and her own personal hardship, she was able to create an organization that brought fresh produce, grains, organic foods to people in our area, which is the Asheville, North Carolina area, at no cost, no questions asked and no cost. And it has turned into such an amazing organization. They have tons and tons and tons of produce that they have given out to markets, health and wellness classes, and it just continues to skyrocket. So it's a very inspiring story and was perfect for that chapter.
Well, I really do want to encourage our leaders to get this book because this just chock full of these kind of stories, and they inspire because they're stories about, this is not a story about, you know, Steve Jobs or, you know, Winston Churchill. These are real people. These are everyday people that we can relate to that are doing it, that are finding a way, that are persisting without exception, that are pivoting when they need to, that are, you know, persevering and surviving and thriving. So great stories in the book. What about the three of you? How do you, you know, maybe each of you can talk a little bit about how are you living, surviving, and thriving in this pandemic? What are your go-to practices that you're employing to make sure that you're staying healthy and positive and productive despite everything that's going on around us? And I'll pick on any of you, just go in any order that you want. What comes to mind as to what your practices are that you would share with us?
Well, I'll start. It's Grace. I'll start. So in the very beginning of the pandemic, I was noticing that I wasn't sleeping very well. And that was really creating a very cranky Grace for the rest of the world. And I researched some of the different reasons why people might be having trouble sleeping. And I sort of started to like knock some, just get a checklist. Oh, I tried that, tried that, tried that. And so I got down to the point where I was thinking, oh my gosh, like there's not a solution for me. But then I remembered that every time I go on vacation, I find myself wanting to go into the hot tub of the like the pool area. And I always notice that when I'm on vacation that I always have like the best night's sleep. And maybe that's because I'm on vacation, but also maybe it's because I've, you know, spent time in a hot tub. And so I did some research on that and found out that there's a lot of connection to, the relaxation that you feel in a hot tub and getting good night's sleep. And so that I've saved up all my money over the summer and we bought a hot tub and it gets delivered in a couple of weeks. And, you know, that for me, it's like I had to try and work towards a goal and figure out a solution for me that I hope will help. With some of my own self-care. And so, you know, all of us have like different things that we can do to try and change our routines or to try and, you know, increase our stamina or whatever it is that we need to change. And for me, it was just like really trying to figure out a way that I could take some time just for me and relax and then also, you know, help relax myself physically with my muscles at the same time. So that I hope is the solution for me. And if it doesn't work, I'll be so bummed, but I'll keep on looking, you know, and researching and trying to figure out, because I really think that sleep, nutrition, and, you know, Danielle could definitely speak better to this. Sleep, nutrition, and laughter are probably the three top things on my list that make me whole. And if any one of those three things is missing, then I have a challenge, you know, in my day. So
that's great. Phoebe or Danielle, what's your practice?
I definitely am. I have a kind of a self-care routine that I do almost every day. And it's usually a combination of some Ayurvedic principles of just some self-care and then doing some yoga, some breath work, some meditation. I've realized over the years, it doesn't have to be really, really long. It can be 5 to 10 minutes of those plus some self-care things to get me grounded and ready to start the day. So I'm more in my feet, less in my head, so I can be more prepared as things kind of shift throughout the day, that I'm really grounded and more calm. When I don't do those things in the morning, I can definitely feel that the day kind of takes over me. And I can become more anxious. And there's those things that come up. You get anxious, you get tired, then you start eating because you're kind of stress eating. And then you feel mentally unclear because you've eaten sugar. And so it's kind of like if I don't prepare that half hour in the morning to set my day, the rest of the day can go awry. And so I stick pretty firm about doing those things in a routine each morning. And I go through a lot of those in the book of just, here are some helpful hints that you could try to reground yourself or to calm your nervous system. So I hope that's helpful for others too.
It is. It's also, you might be one of the rare ones who actually practices your profession. You know, it's like what is it they say? The plumber always has the leaky sink and the barber has the worst hair. And, you know, we know how to tell others and we know the right way, but we don't always apply it to our own lives. And you're doing that for our listeners, because many of them may not be familiar with the term Ayurveda. I wasn't. Can you briefly explain what that is?
Wow, that's a long podcast in itself, but okay. It's pretty much how I like to relate to it is it's kind of similar. People have heard of Chinese medicine. It's and this is based in India. So the sister science to it is yoga. It incorporates various herbs that might work for you. It incorporates self-care, and it's really it's a whole science in itself that individualizes each person to what works best for them based on elements. It gets complicated, but it can be simple at the same time. But it's really about bringing your own body, your own mind, and your own spirit back into balance. And there's tools, there's self-care tools and techniques that can help with that. So I do practice what I preach, but I also am the first to say I didn't practice what I preached on some days, and that's okay too, because you know, it's life and we're all on a journey and there's no judgment as right. we are all
give yourself a break
way.
Yeah,
yeah, like it's cool, man. It's cool. If you don't meditate today, it happens. Try it again tomorrow.
It's all good. I have a coach that I follow a lot, and listeners have heard me talk about him a lot, Marshall Goldsmith. And he's the author of the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Have you ever heard of it? He's a multi New York Times bestseller and like world's number one executive coach and on and on. And he inspired me to play a little, not a game, but to go through an exercise with an accountability partner or a thought partner. I'm not doing it today, but I did it for a while with a coworker when I was in Virginia. And he has a colleague slash friend that I don't remember exactly how this goes, but he basically had someone that he connected with every single day by phone, if not in person. And they asked each other a set of questions, predetermined questions. So like if you were my thought partner, I would say, Danielle, every day when we talk, I want you to ask me the following five questions every day, the same five questions every day. I want you to ask them to me. And so there might be questions like, I might want you to ask me, did you spend time in prayer, meditation, or contemplation today? How much time did you exercise today? What did you do for someone today that added value to their lives? Whatever that might be. But the rule is no judgment on the answers. No, you know, well, gosh, you didn't exercise today. What went wrong there? You know, like nothing like that. Just, okay, you didn't. Hey, today you didn't. And there was this liberating feeling of, I'm going to be asked the question, so it stays top of mind and aware, and I hold myself accountable, but nobody's going to judge me if it didn't work out today or tomorrow. Like, you know, it's a journey. So I appreciate that. Right. Phoebe, there's some information in the book about you that gives me a hint as to some of the things you might do to live, survive, and thrive in the pandemic. But what would you say are your kind of go-tos when you need that self-care?
Well, both my husband and I swim. So that kind of is like one of the few routines I have in my life, since I tend to live my life without routine. I never know when I'm going to be working or when creativity is going to hit, and I run off and do an art project, or I run off and start coding a website. So I'm pretty flexible in that sense, but I definitely think that staying close to nature and being outside and walking and just breathing is my number one go-to. I mean, it's just the easiest way for me to be grounded. And you know, it's interesting, you were talking about accountability. I participate in some pretty good masterminds, and I'm a big believer in masterminds or strategic roundtables. And part of being successful is having an accountability partner, having someone that is non-judgmental, but is there beside you. You know you can count on them, they can count on you. And it brings a level of persistence, as we were talking earlier, that normally you might not have in your life. And I think that's really, really helpful.
Mm. Yeah. And you again, I'll sing your praises a little bit more. And something I didn't know about you. Like I knew you had this creative side and you apply that to your digital work, but I did not know that you were a painter.
I do. I'm actually a batik artist, and I've been a batik artist since I was 11. Yeah. And it's the one form of artwork that has stuck with me through the years. Mm. And I love being able to draw nature and be able to, you know, bring those elements to our work, the little doodles that were done in the journal. All three of us have a huge level of creativity, and it's really a joy when you can find different ways in which you can express it. And that's what we bring out in each other, is a level of creativity that is just unsurpassed.
That's awesome. And I know there's research behind the value of creativity and the value of nature. You talked about being in nature. Mm-hmm. I know there's research that talks about the power of being connected to nature and for our own health and psychological well-being and spirituality and everything else. So these are just great. I mean, we could probably go on for hours and talk about these practices and stories. I am interested in any or all of you speaking to how this book applies to leaders and leadership in particular. So my job as the podcast host is to make sure that everything is viewed through the lens of leadership. So this is great. It's about self-care and surviving in a pandemic. How would you tie it to leadership? I think some of the stories you've told already, you know, lend to that. But if we had on this show, if we had listeners who were Fortune 500 company CEOs down to, you know, single leaders of a, you know, solo nonprofit, or just a leader in a neighborhood group or a church group or a family, how does this apply to the concepts of leadership in your view? Or how would you make that connection?
Well, Patrick, this is Grace again. I was listening to your interview with Nick Nanton earlier this week, and one of the things that struck me in that interview was his definition of leadership, where he said leadership is the example you set for the people that you serve.
Yeah.
And that's, like he said, that was one of the best definitions of leadership he's ever heard, and I very much agree with that statement. You know, I blog on leadership on my Arts in Action website, and a lot of the stories that I tell very much are told from the lens of the leader of the organization. And I think that what we tried to do in this book was emulate the advice and the storytelling that were in the pages in our real lives. And, you know, one of the things that we did was make that commitment to each other, very similar to what you were talking about with your mentor and coach in Virginia. And I think that that's all part of the leadership, you know, cocktail is making commitments to people and to being the example that you set for the people that you serve. And I think that that book does that. And I think that we all do that on a daily basis with the work that we do with the for-profits and nonprofits that we come in contact with.
The three of you are familiar with a satirical character that shows up every once in a while at BRI named Dennis Ray.
We love Dennis Ray.
who became BRI famous anyway for a saying that he made during the orientation session for new members, where he looked at him and told him, and you have to know the character to really get the full appreciation for this. But what he said was, hey, the first thing you need to know about this conference and this group is that it ain't all about you. And everyone kind of laughed because, you know, he looked him in the eye and said, it ain't all about you. But some of it is, he said. Mm-hmm. And the line drew a lot of laughter. You know, it's not all about you, but some of it is, or, you know, and I, you know, it was just a humorous sort of thing. But as I thought about it more and more, I thought there's actually like some powerful truth in that. In leadership, it's not all about us as leaders, but some of it is. Mm-hmm. And if we don't care for ourselves, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the idea that if you can't breathe, you can't help somebody else. It's why they right. have you put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help others on the plane. Sure. And so I agree with you. I think it is modeling because it leaders, here's what leaders do, especially leaders in the social sector. I see this all the time because it's so full. The sector is so full of true servant leader spirits, right? You're in this because you really want to make a difference and you care about your people, sometimes to a fault I could go into. But the idea is that we tell our people all the time, take some time, you should use your vacation, take some time, you know, don't worry about this, don't worry about that, you know, take some time for self-care, find ways to, but then we're not doing it. And so how are the people who we're trying to get to follow us? Do we want them to obey our words only when they look at us and say, well, you don't do it. You don't ever take time off. You don't ever take care of yourself or think about that. You just work, but you want us to do that. So that example is actually part of service, is to self-care. I think you've made that connection beautifully in talking about example.
So this is Danielle, and I think, first of all, I will kayak at any moment. Like that's my jam, and I'm all about self-care. So kayaking and stuff. But I think what the book was really like inspired to be almost like a template of not only the stories and the particular themes of each chapter, but the stories, and then also to look in those stories about themselves, the reader and the leader. So it's like, here's the story of resilience. Here's a great story of somebody else. How have I been resilient? How have I been resilient as a leader? How have I been able to take my psychological immunity for the better? So I think it's like, it's a story, but it's also an opportunity for self-reflection on how they can either be a better leader or a different leader or what's working. And then having a lot of tools in the toolkit for them between the self-care, between some of the themes and the bullets that are underlined in the chapters. And then the journaling. So it's like the leader has an opportunity to work this on so many different dimensions to look at what's right, what's working, what can I do better? So I just wanted to add that.
That's great. Yeah. Anything else that any of you want to add on the tie to leadership? So I
just, hold on. I was going to say, Patrick, this is Phoebe. The one thing that I hope your listeners get from this is that all three of us view ourselves as resources. And I think we're very approachable. And I think that comes through in the book. And I want, and you know that because you know us as individuals, but I want people to realize that we brought some great examples. But more importantly, we're here. We'll listen. We can talk. And we have resources that, you know, you don't know about at this moment, but if you ask, you do. So I just wanted to bring that one little snippet.
Thank you. Let me talk about this now really quickly, because the book is one thing. You can go to Amazon and get the book. It's great. You can make it an airplane read, or you can take it more slowly and more introspectively. It's one of those where you get to kind of read it the way you want to read it. But the website might be where you can really engage, and it's reactivateyourlife.com, or actually it's re-activateyourlife.com. If you're, we'll put the link in the page notes, but if you're listening to this on Apple or Stitcher or whatever, it's and then activateyourlife.com. And the website has so many resources right off the bat. Of course, there's a link to the book and an explanation of it, but there's also a workbook. There's some great testimonials about, you know, what other people are getting out of the book. There is a Facebook group that people can get a hold of. There's a blog, there's a newsletter that people can sign up for. It's like, let's make this more intentional and spend some time in it. So I love that this isn't just, hey, we wrote a book. I think you've again demonstrated that you want this to be a resource, and I appreciate, Phoebe, you saying that the three of you are exactly that kind of authentic, where you will be there for anyone that wants to reach out to you. So, not wrapping the show up quite yet, but I thought now would be a good time to go ahead and plug that site, because it is a tremendous resource.
And you know, Patrick, this is Grace. When we were talking about like what we wanted to put out there in the world, we were thinking we wanted this to be sort of like the chicken soup with a soul, mm-hmm. for the nonprofit or for the leadership sector. We wanted, you know, this to continue. We just didn't want to write something and be done. We wanted to build a community, and we wanted to have a conduit to tell other people's stories, just so that we would be able to elevate their stories if maybe they weren't able to. So that's really kind of what we're about with this project. And, you know, we don't know where it's going to go, but we've got a bunch of folks interested in our presentations on the subject matter, and we're sort of you know, tailoring them to the different audiences. In December, we're going to have a free presentation opportunity with the State Library of New Jersey, and we'll definitely, you know, get that out on our Facebook page and on our website. But, you know, this can take us in all different directions, and we're just kind of excited to see what happens, because it gets us working together, you know, more, and it's not just a one and done. There's a future with this concept.
The chicken soup for the soul analogy is a really good one. That's the feel I get from this. It is that kind of feel. Really helpful. So a question that I ask all the guests that come on the show, I'm always curious as to who the leaders were or are, but particularly who the leaders were in your early career or life that have helped shape your view and philosophy of leadership. And what made them the leaders they were? Why did that resonate with you? And so just sort of who some of those leaders are. For some people, it's, you know, a parent or a teacher or a mentor. But I just, those always inspire me, because I think it helps us think about how we might be that person for someone else. So who, again, in no particular order, but I'm curious to know who those leaders were in your early career that have shaped you and your view on leadership. One at a time, please.
Well, I had given this some thought a little bit, and, you know, it was funny because really nothing like really popped out. I mean, Gandhi, of course, pops out for me. That's a big leader. But I think it was like all the little community leaders in growing up. I was heavily involved in sports, and, you know, all the coaches that I've worked with, and like more on a small community, and almost like it's a little gray as to the faces, but I just know it was a lot of little bits and pieces from people in their leadership, as opposed to, let's say, one big influential world leader of sorts. So I don't know, like that's a good question for me to continue to journal on and reflect, because, you know, you don't get asked that question often, and it really got me to really start thinking.
No one has yet answered that question the way you just did. With, I mean, people have talked about, yeah, it's the community leader, or the teacher or whatever, but your description, wow, just sent me thinking about so many things. What was it you said? Sometimes the faces are kind of grayed out, or what, like you don't even know maybe their names, but you have these senses and memories of moments that have shaped you from in the community. Yeah. How powerful that is. That really makes the point even better about how we don't know who we might be impacting and affecting in good or bad ways, by the way. But yeah, what that is, so, man, that's I think on that one a minute. That's actually kind of a really that's an inspiring sort of deep thing to think about, that the leaders that have inspired you, the faces are sort of gray. Like I can't quite put my finger on them. I know them. I remember them. Oh, that's so cool. I don't know why that's cool. I just think that's neat. It just hit me. It's hit me a certain way. Hit me a certain way. How about the others? Grace Ann or Phoebe?
Well, this is Grace. I'll go. So in the art world, creatively, I think I've been most inspired by Georgia O'Keeffe and Frida Kahlo and their stories of individualism and the challenges that they both overcame to be the creative souls that they are. And then in the organizational leadership realm, I would say, you know, Danielle and I both worked at a support coordination agency for people with developmental disabilities. That's how we met. And Danielle actually trained me how to do that job. And that was back in 1994. And the two women who owned and ran that company, Diane White and Peggy Ogle, I learned a lot about advocating for and working with marginalized populations through the two of them. And Peggy Ogle passed away probably almost 8-9 years ago. But Diane White and I still do work together as consultants, and she's still a very big mentor for me. And you know, I sort of feel like I collect mentors along the way. That's what my life is all about. Like every couple of months I find a new mentor. And I sort of like go under their wing and try and learn as much as I can from them. And I feel like, you know, the Blue Ridge Leadership Institute provides me that opportunity as well. So, you know, there's many, many people in BRI that I turn to for support and observe often, like how they deal with different situations. And I learn from them all the time. You know, Andrea Smith comes to mind, and Heather Adams, and Eileen Coogan, and Sue Buchholz, and, you know, just really wonderful, well-rounded leaders that, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with. You yourself, Patrick, you know, I've learned a lot from you and the different committees we've been on together. So I would say that my leadership acumen evolves on a daily basis, but I always put myself in the room of people who can inspire me. And I think that that's also another part of leadership, is like always showing up and being open to learning from others at any given time.
Wow. While you're on it, we might as well go ahead and just like fully plug BRI, right? yes. Because we're talking about it, and our listeners are going, what is this BRI they keep talking about? And yeah, all four of us are familiar and know each other, in at least in part through that organization. So, real quickly, BRI is formerly the long name, the Blue Ridge Institute for Southern Community Service Executives. And so formed in 1927 near Black Mountain, North Carolina, in the Blue Ridge Mountains near Asheville, and formed as really a getaway, a conference, or a retreat, a time for social service executives to come together, to learn together, lead better together, and a time of renewal. And over the years, it morphed, and we've moved around now and things. And we now just call ourselves BRI because we're not limited to the South, and it's not limited to community service executives. It's about social impact, and it's about leaders in the sector looking to make change. Much of it is still very organizational, and, you know, organizational executive directors and vice presidents and things. It is a leadership institute. But it's all about learning, leading, and renewing. And it's if you have interest in it as a person who's, you know, part of your work is around creating social impact, go to BlueRidgeLeaders.org for more information, or reach out to any of the four of us and let us know about interest, because it is a really powerful mechanism, and meet once a year. This year we met on Zoom like everybody else, but the gatherings we have are just, they're transformational. And
yep, I would say life changing. Yep,
they really are. So let us know if you have any additional interest in that. Phoebe, leaders in your life?
Actually, it's pretty simple. Mm. It's my mother. Oh. And my mother was the only female television producer director in educational television back in the 60s.
Wow.
And we were raised in American Samoa, and all of the villages and the population was taught via television. Phenomenal experiment. An amazing amount of information was gathered through the years teaching via television. And I think that, you know, I used to joke that I was like the first person in e-learning, the true e-learning. And she was amazing. She was so far ahead of her time. So she set my educational standard and what passes for amazing education and information. She set the bar, and I haven't surpassed it. So she's my biggest mentor.
Wow, man! You think you know somebody? You think you know some, and these are what great things, what great learnings. I have one more sort of closing question. So before I ask my closing question, let me just open it back to up to any of you as to anything else you might want to add about just, you know, a contribution to leadership or anything else about the book or the work behind the book or how people can engage with you. Anything else you want to add that my questions haven't given you a chance to talk about yet?
I feel like it's very well covered. I don't have any further questions or comments.
You all did cover it incredibly well, and I'm so appreciative of you coming on the show. My last question for each of you is, what is your number one piece of advice for leaders during a pandemic or otherwise? If you had that sort of one, you know, what's the Danielle Sangita Rottenberg, you know, here's my message to all leaders, or here's the one tenet I would hope everyone would pay attention to. What would that be for you in any order?
I would say humility. / drop the ego.
Wow. Because it ain't all about you.
Right. I think there's great leaders. And I think a great leader is not having an ego. It's really about a collaborative experience, and that we all have a lot to offer, and we do our best work when we rise and raise each other up, as opposed to bringing others down. And I just, that's a very long one word, but an important one.
Great advice.
Roseanne? Do you have a word, or
Phoebe
or
likes to have, Phoebe likes to I'll go last. I don't know if anyone's noticed that yet.
No,
kind of seeing a pattern.
I'll go next to break the pattern. It's really easy. It's ASK. Ask. Just ask.
Wow.
That's great.
That is great.
See, we should have ended with that. That's so much better than mine.
No, lay it on us. What's on your mind?
I would say a commitment to compassion as a leader. And then also, you know, a theme from one of your past podcasts, self-awareness matched with honesty. I think we all need to really be aware of what our strengths and talents are and being honest about that. And then ask, like Phoebe said, ask for help with the stuff that, you know, other people can help you with. And that's okay. You know, Brené Brown talks about vulnerability all the time. And I think that, you know, that this book is about vulnerability, but it's also about, like, okay, now we've exposed ourselves. How do we figure out, you know, how to make this work? And it's about the different tactics and tips that have worked for other people and maybe can be applied to your life.
Fantastic. Yeah, ladies, listen, this is such an outstanding episode. You've added just tremendous value to me, not just today, but just in the people that you are. I think our listeners can clearly see that you are practitioners of what you preach and your models. And I love the authenticity and the vulnerability and the talent and the creativity and the dedication and persevere, all of it. All of you just inspire me so much, and I'm so much more inspired now. I'm glad we did this. I got to know you a little bit more and your work. And I do want to encourage all of our listeners, get into this. This is really great stuff. It's easy. You know, not going to cost you an arm and a leg, but it's a really great thing to dig into. And until our next episode, folks, lead on. See you next time.